Hello and welcome back to 30 Pieces of Silver here on WVW-TV. I'm Tom Littleton. You may remember me from some of Brandon's past shows. We've started this program, and of course it's titled after not only my website, but also the idea that there is betrayal in our midst, that there are people who are willing to betray God, to betray their own souls, and to betray those around them. And as Judas Iscariot sold out his own Lord and Master for 30 pieces of silver, I had one word of faith, a young woman tell me, well, that was a lot of money in those days. Well, actually, it wasn't. It was the price of a slave. But what difference would it make if it was a lot of money? I mean, would you be thinking about it if it was a lot of money? Well, I would tell you this. Apparently, a lot of guys are thinking about it and considering it and willing to weigh their own souls in the balance and actually make that commitment to betray the church and to betray our children and to betray the truth of the gospel and the power of the gospel. So we want to look at some of those people, who those betrayers are, and how this movement is affecting the church and these kind of things that are flooding in. So 30 pieces of silver, we're glad you're with us, and I hope you'll take this one, this next one, to heart, because I would say this is one of the biggest areas of betrayal going in. This episode 4, this is the LGBTQ agenda versus religious liberty. Now, you may have noticed that there is an entire herd of people. And I borrowed this graphic from an article that I saw. It said, sexual rights and religious rights, the final civil war. So this author saw that this as like the last ground. You see the Christian flag going against the rainbow flag. And of course, this makes a lot of really, really nice theater, right? But there's a conflict that exists between LGBTQ rights and religious liberty and freedom of speech and those First Amendment rights that are guaranteed to us. So those, of course, we're told sometimes by not so conservative and non-political Christians that, well, you're not guaranteed those rights. Well, America has had and enjoyed those rights for almost 250 years via the Constitution, and as other places have. And of course, without those, there's going to be great hindrance to the church to be able to effectively minister in the public square and to preach the gospel on the airwaves and of course, things like this. There was actually a church that sued the city in Edinburgh because they had a public facility they were using, and they had set up an American speaker to come, a pastor who had been outspoken against homosexuality and abortion. And so they canceled the event. The city canceled the event because he was propagating hate speech. And so in reality, it cost that church money. And so the church sued the city, and they actually were awarded $35,000 to make up, I guess, for what they had spent promoting the event and all that. So that's happening in Europe already. So get ready, people, because we're fast-tracking our country to be in the same shape that personal rights and religious freedom and so forth are in Europe. So this stuff is coming to America. But as you see in this graphic, the idea that this is the final civil war, I would say that it's intriguing that one of the figures of the civil rights movement, Baird Rustin, actually said in the 90s that gay would be the new black. And so this movement of LGBTQ into the church is taking a unique form in that it is specifically working to target the church. And of course, the church rolled over and played dead when we allowed marriage to be redefined and hardly said a word about it. But Baird Rustin actually worked with MLK, with the founding of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But all these LGBTQ organizations, it's kind of a big tent of sexual minorities, and they're working for normalization and mainstreaming of all the divergent sexual identities, and then the transgender movement, which then leads us to the transhuman movement, that which then sort of unravels it all, because at the same time they're pushing the idea of sexual orientation being permanent and fixed, they're pushing the idea of biological gender being non-binary and fluid. So you get the intentional confusion that's going on. So what some people's idea has been to preserve the integrity of the church has been to move the church into this narrative. And so we're kind of filling the house with activists. But I don't know if you're familiar with the Human Rights Campaign, but they came to our city with $8.5 million. I live in Birmingham, Alabama. They came to our city with a project that had been funded for Mississippi, Alabama, and Arkansas to push what was called Project One America. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But I got very acquainted with Human Rights Campaign because of my work in New York, and also later with some of the agenda that I was facing with some of the ministries that I've been involved with. But they have all kinds of little jewels. They have the Healthcare Equality Index, where they rate healthcare organizations, hospitals, for their LGBT policy and inclusion. They have the Municipal Equality Index, where they rate the cities for whether or not they are grand and inclusive enough. And so you get on their scoreboard, and then you get a bad number, then of course you're going to get a lot of bad press out of that. But as we see this this battle sort of square off, then of course it eventually made its way into the big battle, and I think this is the Obama administration's lasting legacy, is that in 2015, under the Obama years, marriage was redefined, and it was redefined by the Obergefell Supreme Court decision, which made marriage between same-gendered people the law of the land. You could not discriminate in marriage. And of course, the dissenting opinions, those justices all said, that who are dissenting, that because marriage is a religious institution, then it's going to bring conflict, that there is going to be a place where this would come down to where the rubber meets the road. There would be a problem here, and that there would be conflict between religious liberty and this new definition of marriage. So back to that first slide there, this final civil war. Well, one of the great battlegrounds was over marriage, and that went on for years. And there's already been some buyer's remorse, and some of those who, cities and other places, states who legalized gay marriage, and some of them have sought to reverse those decisions. But in America, the church just sort of rolled over and played dead about this issue. And I think that's symptomatic of the bigger problem within the church and how this narrative is gaining steam to be more worried about inclusion and acceptance and gay rights than worried about fidelity to the scripture and to the historical reality that marriage is between a man and a woman, and that the idea, one SCOTUS dissenter said that even ancient Rome didn't try to take it upon themselves to redefine marriage, even though they were very tolerant of homosexuality in their culture. So marriage for the Christian should have held a much more guarded and precious position. But by the time it fell, it was sort of disregarded as, well, it's just, you know, it was inevitable, it was going to happen, so not really any big deal. But I will tell you, given that in God's mind and in God's purposes, that marriage is to be a picture, an image of, and to be a representative type of the relationship of Christ to the church, that this is a big deal, people, that it is a big deal that marriage has been, for the first time in history, in much of the West, has been redefined as pretty much open borders, whatever goes. And we haven't seen this thing really come into full fruition yet, where people are wanting multiple marriages, polyamorous marriages, and multiple loves. Of course, there is some history of that within sectarian groups and cults like the Mormons and some others, and then some ancient history, even in the time of the patriarchs, that people would have multiple wives, multiple marriages. But gay marriage and the loss of biblical marriage marriage being between one man and one woman has caused a seismic shift to take place in the church. And if you don't realize that, then you may not really be paying attention to it, to what this means. But this grand picture of Christ and the church has been lost. And of course, in my state, Alabama, now there is no necessity of a sacred ceremony or committal. It's just a contract. You go down and sign. The judge, the justice of the peace, doesn't have to perform any kind of ritual. You don't have to exchange vows or anything like that. You don't have to go to the church afterwards. If you do, the pastor doesn't even have to sign it, because when you and your chosen, whoever that may be, whatever that may be, same sex or not, sign the contract, then voila, you are married. It's simply a contract. So in order to protect the churches from having to be forced to, protect the probate judges from having to do these ceremonies, they've just reduced the marriage to a contract. So it has weakened the very meaning and essence of marriage, because there's no committal. There's nothing sacred left about it in the minds of many. So no one's ever compiled these statistics, but I would love to know how many people are getting married from the gay community today, and what was the average after the initial sort of flash, once the denial of marriage had been lifted and that rush to get married. A couple of stats. I would love to know how many gay marriages there are on average every year now. And also wonder about the divorce rate, because we were told that gay marriage was actually going to strengthen the institution of marriage. But ultimately what this is doing is forcing the conflict between Christianity and the predominant religion here in America, and the idea of redefining family. So so we've lost a lot in this, and it's actually become, the church has actually become an ally with the LGBT agenda. And of course, behind marriage equality is, of course, feminism, and the idea that we're going to see feminists sort of rule the day. And of course, my main point here is that you're not going to get away with redefining marriage without creating the conflict, as the SCOTUS leader said, and then pressing this new definition into the church. So I don't know if you remember this guy. All this push for LGBT inclusion and idea of churches being welcoming and hospitable, it's not a new thing, because years ago, when the mainline denominations were grappling, I guess, they would have us believe, with this issue, they decided, well, we could ordain non-practicing homosexuals. We could take non-practicing homosexuals into our membership, and everything would be okay. Well, not long down the road here, the Episcopal denomination, once one of the largest Protestant denomination, very wealthy and influential denominations in America, actually moved beyond the non-practicing ordination and ordained Gene Robinson, who is and was openly gay guy, from the priesthood to a bishop's office. So that's the bishop's mitre there on his head. And I understand during this there was a big dust-up in the media over this, and there should have been, because millions of people lost their churches because they weren't going to stand for this. This was in 2003, if I remember. And he was said to be wearing a bulletproof vest during his ordination. I can't really tell from this picture, but there he is in all this nice regalia, and showing how inclusive and modern now that this the church has become, the Episcopal Church. But what happened as a result of that? Well, the Episcopal Church split Millions of people, as I said, lost their buildings and their church homes, buildings they had built. I knew several people who were members of Episcopal churches, knew several people who were ministers in them. And of course, there was this mass exodus. Well, I guess that could be blamed on the conservatives who just wouldn't be forward-thinking enough for these agendas. But in reality, where these agendas were taking the Episcopal Church was into near bankruptcy because, of course, Gene is retired now and moved on. He's on the board of Human Rights Campaign, some of these other activist organizations, and continuing to push for full LGBT equality. But in our day, there's a whole set of narratives that have arisen. And they were, instead of non-practicing homosexuals, the narrative has been same-sex attracted but celibate Christians. Now, as weird as that may seem, by 2013, this narrative was everywhere. And there were a host of people like Sam Alberry, Rosaria Butterfield, I had to think of a couple of others, a guy named Christopher, Asian guy, trying to remember some of those. But this narrative was everywhere. And there were books all of a sudden everywhere about it. Is God anti-gay? Then this whole movement began to flood into not just the old affirming churches, but into the conservative churches which had not affirmed and were not accepting or into membership or ordaining practicing homosexuals. But of course, when this narrative came along, it was like, well, we don't use a word like homosexual, we're going to use same-sex attracted. And I'm telling you, this stuff came out of massive think tanks through the years. And so we're trying to find alternative terms so that people are not offended and so that we can push the agenda without a problem here. So I want to give you a little window into the world that I inhabit. I work as a Christian evangelist, and I worked in New York during the height of the AIDS epidemic, and I really got to see how the gay culture lived. We ministered a lot to victims of AIDS and watched a lot of people die, and they were warehoused in old hotels, and then I watched how they worked throughout the city to end up in powers, places of power, and they worked in the city to gain the opportunity to have every city agency, especially Department of Education, filled with activists, filled with gay activists. And so that ideology was really spreading throughout, even into the churches there, but there weren't a lot of really conservative churches in New York. There were a few, but many of the churches were willing to just be there. And of course, Riverside Church, which was started by Rockefeller, it had its own float every year in the Pride Parade. So you find a lot of these very celebrated, affirming, and welcoming churches. But in the end, that wasn't doing people in homosexuality any good because it didn't offer them any hope. And we are all sexual sinners. You'll find that to be true with the person that you face in the mirror every morning. We all struggle with lustful thoughts and with the war between the flesh and the spirit and the culture that we live in, the temptations that are all around us in a highly sexualized culture. But you have to realize that Jesus not only convicts us of that sin, but he provides us a way out. And that way out is the cross. So thanks be to God for his unspeakable gift of Jesus and salvation that does promise us transformation. Now, the idea of same-sex attracted was actually built around the concept of sexual orientation. I'm going to show you in the next part of this, in the next episode, where all of that narrative came from. But I want to show you a few things. I was showing you some of those municipal quality index and others, but this is a document put together for USAID, and it says the partnership between LGBT inclusion and economic development, an analysis of emerging economies. So what this actually asserts is that if you really want to have a good economy, you need to be welcoming and inclusive. And I have another book that I can show you in the second half that's all built around that narrative called The Rise of the Creative Class. And you will find, very shockingly, that a lot of Christians were engaging that that ideology and even the author of that book. Here's another one, an event that was held by a human rights campaign called Time to Thrive. And this was held in 2014. It was a youth conference, and they were pushing this in the Department of Education. And the NEA, the teachers union, AT&T, and the Department of Education were all supporters, sponsors, and presenters in this. And now think about this. This is a youth conference for education, Time to Thrive, and Teach for America is one of the big partners in this. And so they had this thing in Las Vegas. Now, Vegas is a great place to have a youth conference, isn't it? A youth education conference. Well, I guess so if you're in in this community, as it were. But sadly, what we've seen today is that this narrative keeps moving along so quickly that few in the church can really track it. They don't know where this stuff is coming from. But when I met with the Human Rights Campaign leaders, I actually signed up to go to one of their events, and I didn't pay the tuition. I kind of snuck in and sat a little while and snuck out, and I took this little jewel with me. This is a Christian conversation guide, a generous faith, and it is walking with our LGBT community. And this is really nice stuff here. A lot of money has been spent on this. This is the actual Christian conversation guide. This is also the paperwork from the Project One America. You can see there that they brought with $8.5 million to my hometown. And so all this was focused on infiltrating the churches with the LGBTQ narrative and to use this talking points in a process of social change. And so what I did is I met with HRC when they came, and we spent 4.5 hours in a local coffee shop in downtown Birmingham, and I asked them to outline their goals and aspirations, and I asked them some uncomfortable questions, like about the funding, which they didn't want to answer. And of course, I didn't have all of these conversation guides, but I did point out the fact that these guys were working. They were on the clock. Their travel expenses and stipend were made, and they were salaried six-figure jobs to come and bring their agenda from D.C. to the Deep South, and mainly in the churches. And of course, they used the idea of Westboro Baptist, which was headed by Fred Phelps, who was actually an ACLU lawyer, as really more of a straw man to vilify evangelicals who were opposed to gay marriage and those who were opposed to the idea of pushing for a gay Christianity or a big inclusive culture in nature. But what I found was, you know, this was just one of those narratives. Another one here was put together. It was called My Mind Was Changed. It says, this is a new way to talk about to talk with conflicted Christians about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in church and in society. Now, people, this stuff is the product of massive think tanks and the psychology, the social sciences. So while they were telling you, oh, we want to talk, why don't we just sit down and talk about this? Same thing was going on inside the public schools. This is LGBTQ America, a theme study of LGBT, transgender, and queer history. So when you see the Q arise and the word queer, you're looking at a more radical. This was actually part of the National Park Service education program. So this stuff under the Obama era was really saturating. And the idea, again, was of a peaceful coexistence. It says reconciling non-discrimination principles with civil liberties, with special focus on LGBTQ. So I'm asking you to consider this. Do you want the church to be engaging these narratives? And then, of course, those who've gone before us who did, the mainline denominations, which fell to this agenda. You see from Gene Robinson's ordination that it's not a pathway to faithfulness. It's not at all a pathway. We're going to come back on the part two of this, and I'll show you more of how this agenda is moving. But the problem that we face right now is that so much of this stuff that's going on behind the scenes, the massive amounts of money that are behind it. The mainstreaming of it via people who have sold out their soul and who sold out the church and are key church leaders who have welcomed this stuff in. This stuff is happening so fast, beloved. It is it's impossible for us to calculate all the moving pieces of it. But I can tell you that what we were facing just 10 years ago is nothing in comparison to where we are now on this trek toward full affirmation of homosexuality and actually the turning of opposition to that into hate speech. Now, when I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, a place where a lot of people would have thought this stuff would have never found a footing, but then there was the Human Rights Campaign who came and pushed the agenda. This is something that came out after their activism in our state. It was called Living LGBTQ in Central Alabama. This is Priorities for Action. So they actually designed their own special tool of activist learning kit and toolkit to be used for this narrative there in the Deep South in Alabama. So, and this was just for five counties in Central Alabama, but those are the main population centers, in including Birmingham, the largest city. So for those of you who are looking at this with enough awareness that this larger movement is taking us into places that we would have never imagined and that the church is tagging along with it, we need to be awakened to this reality that we are not going to stop this agenda, but we certainly can stop our families from being taken into it. Now, I spent years doing apologetics on this topic, and it's not something I would have ever chosen, but I've been in probably 180 churches talking about the agenda and the history of it, and also how it's moving in different areas, including education and in religious and Christian faith in particular. So it would help you if you can pause long enough to step back and look at the big picture and say, well, this movement is not at all what I thought it was. Because if you, we're here in June, if you listen to the talking points of Pride Month and LGBTQ Month, you would think that this is a world of nice people, colorful, creative people who are just wanting the recognition to go about their lives and love who they love, and you know the talking points. So you may be willing to accept that until you start looking a layer in and see how that this agenda is redefining human rights conversation all over the world. It is being used to redefine religious liberty all over the world, and it has a very aggressive agenda that's coming against education and against Christian education and coming against the church and infiltrating the church on a massive level to bring about not equality, but the actual normalization of homosexuality. And when you see that Planned Parenthood is probably the biggest partner in this movement, and that the same funders for Planned Parenthood and the abortion agenda are actually behind this movement and pushing it through, then you realize, wait a minute, there is more to this than I thought, and it's far more nefarious if it's redefining what it means to be human, if it's redefining the narrative on human rights. You're with us on 30 Pieces of Silver. We're on Worldview Weekend on Brannon House Network. I'm really glad to be here and have the opportunity to go into more depth on some of these issues and backgrounds that are coming against conservatives, coming against America, and coming against the church in particular, because whether you're a Christian or not, what comes of the church, as it is the last institution to fall to this cultural Marxist movement, you should at least see where we are on this timeline, how quickly these things have moved along, and how dangerous they are to us and to our children and to religious liberty. So in this conflict, let's look to the Lord here on 30 Pieces of Silver. We'll be back. Tom Littleton, I'm glad that you joined me.